miscellaneous gladiating jobs. I've done a variety of shows on gladiating and chariot racing, covering, you know, most of the well-known aspects. But I've managed to find a few more little odd occupations that took place or were available in these Roman blood sports entertainments that I thought you'd like to, and you'd pretty much enjoy. Now, I'm going to talk about the doctor, the editor, the gladiatrix, and the Atorius. Now, let's start with the doctor. You immediately are going to talk about, okay, this is the person who is going to try and, you know, he's going to be the person who tries to heal the chariot racers. He's a doctor. He's going to fix up the gladiators when they're wounded. And unfortunately, you're wrong. What we call a doctor today was called a medicus in ancient Rome. What you have here is you have an employee who is responsible for training the gladiator. So the doctor is a gladiator trainer, not a healer of wounds. Now, some of these guys are ex-gladiators. They may have won the wooden sword and gained their freedom, or their owner decided to retire them and put them in as trainers. They're basically drill instructors is what you have. I think one of the best examples of this that you can find in motion picture is Spartacus. In the movie Spartacus, you have a scene where he's picked from the Numidian mines and taken to Italy by this rich man who runs a gladiating school. And they bring in this whole bunch of people, and the owner goes up to his doctor and says, I've got a new bunch of people. They seem to be pretty good. And he gives the pluses and minuses and says, you know, take care of them. And then they go through this whole series of events. It's just, if you have not seen Spartacus, get it on Netflix or whatever and look at that gladiator training scene. It's great. It's so funny when the guy says, you know, I want to be your friend. And it brings up all these pictures of drill instructors and boot camp and what have you. And obviously, if you're going to be training gladiators, you're not going to start them off with, you know, with killing weapons. You're going to use wooden weapons most of the time. And they will, of course, be a little lighter, although you can weight them. And as they become more proficient, you can add weights to make them heavier so that you can get an idea of the close actual contact with actual weapons. And I think a good example here is if you've ever been to a Renaissance festival where you have the SCA, the Society for Creative Anachronism, you'll see those people out there using rattan weapons. And the weight is pretty much the same and other things, but you just don't have the cutting ability. The belief that everybody's carrying 20 pounds of steel in their hand is incorrect. You can get as much weight with some lead weights and a wooden handle as you can giving them an actual sword. And of course you don't have your investment screwed up by killing them. And so after you get a certain point, you can then do individual drills with real weapons. Now, the interesting thing is doctors are periodically even used in legions as new recruit trainers, like I said, the modern drill sergeant. So the doctor is the trainer of the gladiators. Now, the next gentleman is the editor. You're going, now, what in the world is an editor doing in a blood sport entertainment? Well, once again, his name has nothing to do with today's meaning. The term editor meant a Roman citizen who wanted to become a professional politician. And to do that, what he would try and create is he would start running for every political office he could come up with, and hoping that he could eventually go from the low end to a higher job and maybe even become a consul. Well, the editor appears in gladiating and chariot racing because in order to stand out against other candidates. Now, Julius Caesar did this on a really large scale, okay, to get public office, the bread and circuses, all right? But initially, these early editors would sponsor small combats. not necessarily in an arena. They may be in a public place. And then after you had this small little gladiatorial event or a man versus an animal or an animal display, what you would end up with is you would then put a little sign on the spot that said, brought to you by, or this was brought to you by so-and-so. And, you know, of course, obviously Julius Caesar's events are much bigger. But if you didn't have a lot of money, what you would do is if you didn't want to use small combats, you could go with unique combats, like unusual combinations or special equipment. Anything you wanted to have it so the people would remember it. And as I said before, the earliest part of being an editor was to remember that who'd put it on. So you would have this little plaque with an inscription that's placed on the spot telling them who provided the funds. Now, when you get to the large events, the editors would tell you up front that they were in charge of it, that these games are dedicated to so-and-so and that I am paying for all of these games. But, you know, there's a real problem with putting on these events, and that is they better be good. Because as a good event or a memorable event would fix the memory of, yeah, I remember Cornelius. He put on that really weird tiger versus wild German contest. If it was a bust, the Romans would remember it as well. And go, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. He put on that gladiatorial display with those people who were uncoordinated. It was embarrassing. So being an editor and trying to move up, you were really taking a chance, because if you made a mistake putting one of these events on, it could cost you. And the next person is the gladiatrix. Now, this is a female gladiator. And there's always been a discussion, did this really happen? Now, it wouldn't appear as you see the woman in the chariot in Gladiator. These were frequently women. They may have fought each other. They may have fought men, whatever else. But there's good evidence that in London they've actually found the burial for a woman. But the best evidence is the fact that the Roman Senate, for years and years and years, kept passing laws forbidding women in the arena. As a matter of fact, in AD 19, Tabula Lauranus made it illegal to recruit women for gladiatorial contests. And the recruitments were the following. You couldn't recruit a daughter, a granddaughter, or a great-granddaughter of a senator or a knight, a quaestor, in Roman society for gladiating, which indicates that there are women in the games of some sort. Now, Emperor Nero and Emperor Domitian put on gladiatorial contests with women. Now, the gladiatrixes are, for the most part, free women. And in some cases, they're war captives. Now, they usually fought one-to-one duels with a short sword. It's very popular. The popular ones are very well paid. But for the most part, the gladiatrixes appear to be paid per fight. So even the lowest end individual would receive that. And of course, they didn't fight every day. I mean, you might have, you know, 14, 15, maybe 20 events a year, depending on, they're not fighting all the time. And then the other part of this, when you get done with the gladiatrix, you have another individual. Our last little miscellaneous job is an autarus, or arturus, A-U-T-O-R-A-T-U-S. That is a volunteer gladiator. And you think, volunteer gladiator? Why would somebody want to volunteer to be a gladiator? Well, why do people become bull riders? Why do people become mercenaries? Why do people do dangerous jobs? There's glamour, there's excitement, there's danger, and of course, people will do anything for money. And so what you have is, you actually have the poor looking for money, and you'll have people looking for fame. And these are usually, these autarotus are usually freedmen or freed ex-slaves. Now, the problem is, you can't become a gladiator as a free man. You can become a gladiator, but you have to give up your free status. Literally, what you do is you're going to give up your civil rights, you're going to give up your social status, and finally, you're even denied the right of burial in a regular cemetery. If you go back to podcasts I've done on other gladiating, particularly what to do with dead gladiators. If you were part of an organization that had a union, the union's job was to find a place where they could bury their members instead of just throwing them in a ravine or, you know, someplace for the animals to tear them apart. So you have to give up your rights in society. Now, to do that, what you'd end up doing is you had to go to a Roman government official, usually a magistrate, which is a judge, and he would record your intention to become a gladiator, to give up all your rights, and you had to prove to him that you were doing this willingly, that you weren't forced to do this. Now, the upsides of this is that, you know, anyone, you're pretty well compensated for this. I mean, the people will go, oh, you get money, you have excitement, you're famous, if you survive. However, these people who are free and become gladiators are very heavily sought after. There was always someone that you could find that was interested in your services, and you can actually negotiate pay. A lot of them received upfront bonuses. And this is how sometimes poor families would survive. One member of their family would become a gladiator and get paid up front. That money would then be given to the family so they could eat and whatever else. That shows desperation. And you can buy your own equipment, or they can provide your own equipment, and then you would buy training, or the person you work for would try training, would train you. And then the only thing you have to do is survive. So that's one of the aspects of gladiating that's very, very, you know, interesting. You know, we look at it from the standpoint of, yeah, okay, most of the people are criminals, or most of the people, you're sentenced to gladiate. But, you know, when you see famous gladiators out there, and you see how the women fawn over them and all how much money they make, you start doing the same thing. I mean, it's not quite as anywhere near as deadly, but if you think about it, look at the number of people who try to become a professional athlete and will give up everything to train and work and do things like that, but only a tiny fraction of the very best of any collegiate or any athletic endeavor ever become professionals. And even those that become professionals don't always make big bucks, and it may not last, their career may be very short. It's just that they're not being killed for the most part. They may get injured and have other things, but there are people who will give up everything to try and get that fame and try and get that money. So why wouldn't you have people trying to become gladiators? The thought of giving up all of your rights to do this is just incredible. Now, the sources for this: Daily Life in Ancient Rome by DuPont, Life and Leisure in Ancient Rome by Balsden, Working from IX to V by Leon, Those About to Die by Mannix, and Spectacle Entertainments of Imperial Rome by Beecham. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and thank you very much.